Good evening, James McCanny here with my Science Hour, June 23rd, 2011, going directly into the show tonight. And tonight's main science topic, as most of you know, those that have looked at the website, I'm doing a Planet X special just because of the tremendous amount of, well, there's a lot going on, so... First, quite a few announcements. I'll be talking about the Nebraska problem with the nuclear reactors. I'll be giving a little bit of a weather update worldwide. That is getting more serious. Basically, I'll just make a quick comment about weather. I watch the weather on a worldwide basis. Most of the weather you see in the United States, in fact, all of it is relative to certain maybe problem spots. Today we had the announcement that a town in New York was flooded out with a wave of water that just came rushing through. I just saw that on a feed as I was getting ready for the show tonight. Auk, New York, I don't really know where that is. Sounds like a little town, and I don't know where that particularly is. I didn't have time to watch. They're talking about St. Louis, Missouri being evacuated. Of course, the Nebraska situation where vast amounts of area are flooded. The flooding near Minot, North Dakota, the worst in history. But that's local news. What about the rest of the world? Southeast Asia, receiving a tremendous amount of rain, and they have been for a long time. Of course, they are far more used to having monsoon seasons. But the situation is that the rain is worldwide. I guess that's the summary. And it somewhat reminds me of the Noah's flood. I mean, are we starting an era of tremendous rain? What exactly is causing this? And that leads one to the conclusion that this is not man-made. This is simply broad weather conditions. I'll be talking about the sun. The sun has been very explosive electrically, even though the sun in the visible sense, in terms of light output, in terms of magnetic field, etc., has been quiescing, has been silencing, has been going down in energy. In fact, NASA scientists and other scientists who study these trends claim that we are heading into a mini ice age. So how can we have this tremendous amount of flooding, etc., around the world, and the tremendous winds? Now, another thing I should quickly mention are winds. We have had extreme winds over this whole year, not to mention all the tornadoes, record numbers of tornadoes. But on just a daily basis, the wind is extreme. We have a lot of wind just on a daily basis, and the wind patterns are not normal. If you look at your normal local wind pattern, they are coming from directions which are not typical of that of your local area. Also wanted to mention for a lot of the new people on this show, I bring you this show commercial free. I don't usually announce that, but you won't find sponsors or other expenses related to this show. And that's number one, so I can fill it, an hour is a short time. And also, it allows me to be exactly who I want to be and say exactly what I want to say, with no frills, with no controls, etc. It turns out to be the largest classroom I've ever had in my life. So, at any rate, I want to make a quick commentary. This way, I was going to lead the show tonight with this comment, but I'll say this. I'll probably make a posting permanently on my webpage at the top. I'll say the following. The majority of the rest of your life, the time and effort that you will spend, this is in the coming years, in the coming months, will be to try to stave off the constant and requests and the exploitation by governments, banking, and everywhere from local governments up to the state, the local city council, etc., all the way up to the federal government, and then the worldwide, the banking community, etc. And everything from getting a speeding ticket up to completely destroying your lives. So at any rate, that's just a comment, just an example. Many municipalities have upped the number of police, or just in Minneapolis area, they have upped the number of highway patrolmen by 60 numbers, and that's a vast increase. And the reason they did that was simply to give out speeding tickets. So that's a form of highway robbery. The people, remember the old highway robbers back in the, in the 1700s, 1800s, and you'd take your horse down the road and you would be robbed. So they had the police, the highway police set up back then to protect the public. Well, now the people doing the protecting are doing the robbing. And it's just, they're not creating safety. They're not, there's no question about what the kind of effect of safety, etc. They are simply robbing the public. $150 at a piece, and then your insurance goes up, causing damage to people's lives, but just so that the government can basically rob you. It's highway robbery. Nothing short of that. I want to talk a little bit about the food shortage worldwide. The rain conditions have destroyed the crops. A lot of people, this is simply one of the things not mentioned. The crop failures in the United States are going to be vast this year. We don't know yet the effect of radiation from Japan on the California growing fields where the bulk of vegetables and fruit are grown in the United States for the United States. But the cold weather and the rain throughout the Midwest, some people have been able to plant, but some have just barely been able to plant recently. So that's not, it doesn't take a rocket scientist. I should mention also cold up in the Midwestern states, the northern Midwestern states, highs in the 50s. This is June. We're almost at 4th of July. There's not going to be any knee high by the 4th of July. That's an expression in corn country, that the corn should be knee high by the 4th of July. I would challenge anybody to send me a picture of any corn that's even close to knee high when we hit the 4th of July. There might be a few, but not many. But the cold weather, corn needs a 90-day growing season with temperatures above 70 degrees, and that includes nighttime. We just haven't had it, and then those early days of the growing season, these cold, wet conditions will damage the return on the crop where it is even planted at all. The world is headed for a population very shortly of 7 billion people. And I want to mention that the Obama administration, not to mention any federal government in the United States, are looking at an agenda of what they call humanitarian genocide, in which they believe there are people who are well entrenched in the policy making in the federal government that believe humanitarian genocide is good for you. It's humanitarian. We want to kill a lot of you for humanitarian reasons. And I would suggest that anybody who has that idea should step up and be first in line. We'll see how many humanitarian genocide experts we have in Washington. But the U.S. population is no different. We are heading from about 8 years ago, a population of 280 million. Now we are dealing with 320 million, and that's the known count. It is where it was falling before. 10 years ago, the U.S. population was dropping. And right now, it has increased by huge amounts by letting vast numbers of aliens in, most of whom have just come across the borders. They're just here, and they really don't have a count. But the first thing they do when they come here is have about five babies. When all of these babies hit, what we're going to do, literally within 5 to 6 years, the United States will have a population of 400 million, and when these kids grow up in another 10 years, this country is going to be in a terrible mess. So at any rate, we're talking about weather, flooding, the flooding that contributes to the Missouri River, where the Nebraska reactors are. North Dakota, South Dakota, Montana getting a tremendous amount of rain, plus the snowpack melting in Montana contributing to the flooding in the Missouri River, and also all of the central states contributing to the Missouri River. It's a tremendously large watershed. The two reactors that are in trouble, the Cooper and the Calhoun nuclear reactors, one of them is shut down for refueling, but the other one is running at full bore. As I looked at the information today, the people in charge of these facilities are saying that there is no problem, but there is a problem. There's a much larger underlying problem in the United States. And so as I talk about flooding and worldwide weather, the solar flaring, let me do a quick mention of solar flaring. As the sun quiesces, and I did a show about a week ago, maybe 2 weeks ago, as I talked about how could the sun be quiescing, yet we're getting all these booming solar flares. They're going out in all directions. One is headed towards Earth. If you live in the northern states, go out tomorrow night on the 24th. That's when the latest flare is expected to hit Earth. You might see some great aurora borealis, the northern lights. But how can the sun be booming when, in fact, it is quiescing in terms of the magnetic fields, in terms of the light output? And the answer is that there are a number of issues going on. The kinetic energy coming out in the form of solar wind and flares is unrelated. It's a form of energy. It's a second form of energy that the sun puts out, totally unrecognized by standard science. And so there's a dichotomy. But what is causing the sun to flare? What is causing the tremendous winds we're seeing? This all stems from the sun. Once again, something that standard science does not understand, it doesn't talk about, and therefore it does not come out in your local weather report. Why is the world experiencing tremendous storms all over the world, not just the United States? These move through very quickly. We have tremendous number of hurricanes, and these are scattered with peppered storms, and the storms are like, I call it peppering, as if you took a pepper shaker and shook it around the United States, or the world, in fact, where you see little, very intense storms, small, extremely intense storms, but they're sweeping through in a very large overall system, a humongous system. So this is indicative of extremely high intensity electrical conditions in the local solar system in the area near Earth. And so the end result is that we have tremendously powerful weather, and your area could be hit by a tornado on any day, and next week it'll be in the county next to you. And so I'm going to send out a proposal here, as long as I'll be talking about Planet X tonight. How could we be heading into an era where something else is coming into the solar system? And there are many people out there that chatter about Planet X, most of them complete non-experts. But the point is, there are many, many, many Planet X-type objects out there. And the people who talk about Nibiru being on a 3,600-year orbit could not possibly be true. We have a history going back 3,600 years. Something came in a bit earlier. The thing that happened about 3,600 years ago was Venus coming through the solar system and becoming a planet. And this is all confused and muddled. And so you have many experts, most of whom have simply gone around the internet, mouse-copied information, and then put it on the internet. And then they wait a few years, they put up an internet site, and all of a sudden, they're an expert. And that's what they call research. They basically, let me just make this statement. Mouse copying and reading magazines and then putting up a website that simply regurgitates what they have seen on everybody else's website, that is not research. Research entails understanding, making advancements, and then putting that piece on your website. So when you go around and you see the books on Planet X, the new books, or you see the other stuff, the internet sites or people claiming to be experts, look at where they really came from, and what you'll find out is what I'm telling you. A lot of people making claims of being experts, but I don't want to dwell on that on the show. It's just that there are a lot of new people to this subject, and they are going to go out there and try and find information, and 98% of what you're going to find on the internet is pure garbage from people that don't know what they're talking about, including the government misinformation sites that want to put out misinformation. Remember that a lot of the quacks and internet pranksters, so to speak, get funding and support from the disinformation crews of the government. So, because if they didn't have those people, they would have to invent them. So it's very, they have a wealth of people out there that they can find to put out information. So at any rate, just want to mention that I will be talking also in the future about the government-controlled entities, communications, telecommunications, media, internet, energy, pharmaceutical, insurance, airlines, transportation, the FAA, the FCC, Food and Drug Administrations, all of these mixed in to basically rob the American public and gouge them and not provide good products. So I'll be talking about all of those in the future. On to the Nebraska. Let me just say this about the Nebraska sites. If you look at the, like, I just pulled up CNN, which I call the Candy Nugget News. I just looked up the fourth thing listed. Of course, the top thing they're going to talk about is the U.S. budget. The United States is broke. And so what are they going to do? Of course, they're going to go out and borrow more money. This is not a crisis. Someone in the World Bank will write another check and bail out the United States, but at a cost. In other words, your children and their children's children will all have to pay for this forever. They're putting everybody into debt forever. And, of course, the real solution is to get rid of the World Bank, the phony monetary system, and get back to real money in this country. Okay, so about the nuclear power plants in Nebraska, what I was saying was that the Candy Nugget News, CNN, ran a story assuring everybody that everything was under control and safe in the two Nebraska power plants. And they really don't talk a lot about the nuclear power problems in the United States, but here's the situation. Many of these plants were built in the 1970s and 80s. They are old. Their tubing, their plumbing, their safety systems are very much outdated. And here's the situation. Most of these plants are commissioned and licensed out into the 2020 and 2030 era. How can you have a plant that was built in 1970 and have it licensed out into the next 20 years? And here's the second situation. The Nuclear Regulatory Commission, which is burdened with the oversight of these nuclear plants, has simply changed their standards so that the nuclear reactors are emitting radiation all over the place, but they're within standards. So it just turns out that the Nuclear Regulatory Commission is being paid off, I don't know other word you could use, to match their standards with the defective rate of these aging, decrepit, old nuclear reactors. Another problem is that the fuel that is being used in these reactors is much higher energy fuel than it was ever believed to be available at the time they were built. The nuclear plutonium, the nuclear fuel from plutonium, bomb-grade plutonium, is being used in nuclear reactors. It wears the reactors out much sooner. It's hard to control when there is an accident. The accident is far worse, and that was a systematic problem in the Fukushima reactor in Japan. And let me just say before I forget it, it is now my belief, and I'm becoming very much more sure of this, well, actually stated on the air, the Fukushima reactor and explosion was man-made. The tsunami, I believe, was man-made. And you look to see who would cause this. Well, gee, the Japanese sold reactor fuel to the Iranians just a short time before. So you can start to see who possibly had a reason to go after Japan. I'll be talking a little bit more about that. But basically, these aging reactors were never meant to be, they were never meant to use high energy bomb grade plutonium fuel, and that's why they're so difficult to control. Secondly, as this fuel becomes used and is put into waste facility, it is now hot enough where you don't just put it in a container and set it there, it has to be cooled. Part of the energy coming off the nuclear reactor has to be used for a cooling unit. And so if that fails, it's just a matter of time, in a very short time, for when the waste products start to melt through their containment vessels and start to pollute. Now, plutonium is a tremendously polluting radioactive element. Just to give you an idea, most nuclear fuel, in fact, all nuclear fuel contains plutonium. Bomb-grade plutonium has a higher percent of plutonium. Plutonium is generated in reactors. So even if you're running what's so-called a peaceful reactor, and it's strictly for energy, you are going to be generating plutonium, plutonium-239. And if you were able to isolate that and get it into a sufficiently high concentration, you could potentially make a bomb. So basically what we have is low-grade bomb material sitting all over this country surrounding all of the nuclear power plants in the United States. If, now we have a scenario in Nebraska where these nuclear power plants are crippled. They have floodwaters around them. They have local staff, but they're just sitting ducks, and literally sitting ducks for a terrorist event. And this one might ask, is somebody planning such an event? It's very clear that Fukushima, I want to give out a website, and I want people to go there and look at this. This website was given to me by a fellow talk show host, and I went there and looked, and we both examined this site, and I find it to be credible. You can go there and look for yourself, but I suggest that you do this. So I'm going to give you a web link. I rarely ever do this. But the name of the site is jimstonefreelance.com. Let me just say that again. It's just like it sounds, jimstonefreelance.com. And I have no affiliation. I don't know anything about the person that put together that website. But all I can tell you is the information is striking. And just in a nutshell, what it shows you is that all of the buildings on the coastline where you see the tsunami coming in, what he points out is that there is no earthquake damage to these buildings as the tsunami comes rolling in. These people had 40 minutes and there were no warnings. The people are in their offices. The cars are all neatly in rows in parking lots. And you see the tsunami come rolling into an otherwise perfectly untouched region. So there were earthquakes in Japan, but what is becoming apparent is whoever did this was waiting for a naturally occurring earthquake to occur and then let off what I said this right away, that the external factors regarding the earthquake in Japan on March 11th had all the markings of a man-made earthquake, where the nuclear bombs were set down in the trenches in the shore off of northeastern Japan and were let off. And so anyway, I just want you to go there when you have time, take a look at that. These are major problems because one then has to ask, if someone is controlling and taking down entire nations in this manner, when is the United States coming? Who is blackmailing the United States, who's controlling our government, etc. So at any rate, the situation. I'm going to just leave it at that, but I'll be talking more about the nuclear reactors, but I wanted to get into the Planet X issue post-haste. One thing I just want to leave a thought is that, number one, the storage fuel has to be cooled down. And if there are malfunctions at these sites where the cooling systems do not work, it doesn't matter if the plant is running or not, because the cooling system that cools the stored fuel, that is a bigger problem, because once those babies start to melt down, it's all over for all of us. It'll be the end of the world, literally, because plutonium will start entering the water system, the water table, the atmosphere, and it'll just be a matter of time until everybody is sick and dying and then eventually dead. And that includes all animal and plant life on Earth. So at any rate, it brings up a question. Could Chernobyl have been caused and man-made? Could the tsunami of Sumatra have been made? Man-made landslide under the ocean. Could the Canary Islands, which harbor some of the biggest potential landslide areas in the world, be ignited by planted nuclear bombs to destroy the eastern United States? And could it be that the U.S. Navy has planted nuclear bombs all over the world to have, in fact, bombs going off, or to remote control devices of other types that could cause what would appear to be natural disasters? Who is behind this? I'm not going to point any fingers myself. You go out and look at this and make your own decisions. You're an informed crowd, and just find out what you think. Quick, before I go into the Planet X update, I just wanted to give a quick update on the food shortage. That's why I believe everybody should have food in storage in their house or in their the place where they would try and have a safe area. And by the way, I don't have any recommendations. Many times people ask me if I have a recommendation for safe areas, and I do not. There are people that have maps and other things. Believe me, I would tell you if I knew, but one person's safe area is not safe for someone else. So the way this world is going today, I don't know if any place is ultimately safe. I wouldn't want to be near the ocean, I can tell you that. But as one other point is, the vast majority of people in this country have absolutely no idea what is going on. So at any rate, looks like people are out there to destroy entire countries. But on the web page, the secure web ordering page, I just wanted to let you know, we once again have meat, Mountain House meat, in number 10 cans. These are the big coffee can size cans of Mountain House freeze-dried meat. This is the good stuff. Sold 6 cans in a case. We have quite a good selection now. Plus, I also just got in a new supply of the 60-day meat and veggie units. That's 6 cans of meat and vegetables in a case that would last a person 60 days, 2 months. And so just go to the secure web ordering site. Also, the pre-filters are in stock. We're managing to keep ahead of orders on those. It's a pre-filter that, now, I just want to mention something about radiation. The pre-filter was designed when we were dealing more with chemicals and oil spills. It's a series of food and medical grade powders that go into a canister that goes on top of your regular gravity feed water filter. It'll fit any of the standard filters that you would buy. But the idea is that it also will take out radiation. Radiation typically attaches to something, plutonium, uranium, the tritium, the elements that come off of a nuclear radiation spill. Those atoms like to attach to something, a dirt particle, a dust particle, and that's how you trap them out of the water before it goes into your water filter. You do not want radiation in your water filter. It's the only place you can get one of these items. It's a design that I was part of developing. So anyway, go to the website, and these are pre-filters. You should have one of those for your water filter system. Just give out the webpage, JMCC, S is in Sam, C is in Charlie, I is in Indigo.com, 7 letters. That's short for jmcanyscience.com, but too many people misspell that, so I have the short version, JMCCSCI.com. Go there, and also all of my shows are archived there. Make sure you listen to previous shows. My shows for the last, I don't know what, decade or more are on that page, on the Radio Archive subpage. So go listen to all of the previous shows. Okay, now I'm going to go into Planet X topics. And there is so much misinformation regarding Planet X that the poor people that are out there just now trying to understand this topic, they're just barraged. And I get reactions from people all the time, customers or fans who write in and want to ask questions. And by the way, I appreciate the courtesy of many fans. There's some fans who become obnoxious and don't know when to control their constant communications, but the vast majority of fans out there are just wonderful. They're very courteous. If they get to talk to me or email, they just very courteous, and so I really appreciate the fan base, very intelligent fan base. So once again, I appreciate that. I want to talk a little bit, first of all, just about myself and my past. I started studying Planet X type issues decades and decades ago. I was an instructor on the faculty at Cornell University in New York, 1979 to 81. I had access to NASA data from many space probes at that time. And prior to that, I studied physics and mathematics. And let me just explain a little bit about what it takes to study physics and mathematics. It's years and years of studying. You are late night and without sleep a lot of the times when everybody else is partying on the weekends. You're in the laboratory. We built our own experiments. I had a double major in physics and mathematics. And so I have a good background in all of these areas. And my master's degree in physics is in nuclear physics, nuclear and solid state physics. So at any rate, then I went on worldwide tours where I studied the public, I studied archaeology. I made a lot of inquiries into the world on my own. And what I learned is that the standard information that you are taught is completely, well, you could use some bad words there, but it's just complete baloney. And so I started to put things together, and when I was at Cornell, I started getting my hands on real data as the first data from spacecraft came by the planets. And I started realizing, you know, my scientific work and my theoretical work regarding magnetic fields and electric fields and the comets. Comets were not dirty snowballs. I started to realize that this was all coming back in the data at a time when nobody had a clue what was going on. And so one of the things I developed was the concept that comets could attract material by what I call the plasma discharge comet model. They became larger, and they became larger. Some of them could become very large, and eventually, if they were on the correct orbit, they could become planets and moons in the solar system by capture. And so I was basically dealing with Planet X type issues long before anybody ever used the term Planet X. Planet X term became popularized in about the year 2000, and everybody seemed to jump on the bandwagon. My research, as I said, goes back, and my early papers talk about the concept of planets coming through the solar system, action at a distance, electrical and gravitational interactions with Earth and the other planets. And one thing I want to also make clear is that As I was studying these, I was at finishing up my tenure at, or not tenure, but my years at Cornell, and a friend of mine said to me, as I was just telling him about what my research was finding, he said, "Have you ever heard about this guy?" And he called him a Velikovsky. And I said, "No, I never heard of a guy named Velikovsky." I had been out of the country, and oddly enough, it was the astronomers at Cornell who had basically buried Velikovsky's reputation and his books and his information because it didn't fit with standard astronomy. And so I had developed my theoretical work long before I even knew who Velikovsky was. But then when I started reading Velikovsky's books, dealing with Venus careening through the solar system, being first noticed by the ancients when it was by the planet Jupiter, and then, as I said, careening through the solar system, it went by Mars as a large comet, sucked the atmosphere and oceans off of Mars, and then continued in on its orbit to pass Earth twice. And you see this in the tales and legends and mythology of the ancients coming from every point on Earth. Then this was in a period about 3,600 years ago, and thus a lot of people today confuse Planet X with a 3,600-year orbit. So at any rate, my efforts to promote my information, I did it in a scientific basis, going to scientific meetings, international scientific meetings, and promoting my work in the face of NASA scientists who had absolutely no clue what was going on, but controlled the media, controlled the information that went into textbooks, that controlled the publication world. Very haughty, arrogant bunch of people, along with astronomers. One astronomer had the audacity to say that astronomers were the closest to God in science because they were the most godlike of all sciences. But at any rate, I'm just giving you a little background, just telling you where I came. And so as I moved through the decades, there were no experts on Planet X. There wasn't even the term Planet X. There were not any big comets that had been seen in the solar system up until the mid-90s with Hale-Bopp coming through the solar system. But anyway, with that little introduction, I want to go back to ancient, ancient times. And if you've never read Velikovsky's books, let me give you some advice. Beware of internet sites that claim to be Velikovsky supporters that use Velikovsky's name. These sites typically just use Velikovsky's name as a draw and then try and sell you something and pretend like the so-called experts on these sites developed all this material. But if you go back, so if you want to know about what Velikovsky wrote, read his books, World in Collision, Ages in Chaos, and Earth in Upheaval. Go read those books and you'll find out what Velikovsky himself had to say. But Velikovsky didn't have access to a lot of information. He had access to a tremendous amount of information, and he had access to ancient texts, including the old texts of the Bible, but he did not have access, for example, to something called the Colbran. Now, there again, back, and I won't say exactly when, the Colbran is a collection of books that have been published in modern print. In around the year 1991, I believe, was the first appearance, private edition. And so what happened is, the Colbran was a collection of books that came from an abbey in England, but it was the remnants of the library of Joseph of Arimathea, was the great uncle of Christ. It was Mary's basically uncle. And so after the crucifixion, Joseph of Arimathea went to England, where he had been many years and where it was obvious Christ had been when he was young, went to England and formed an abbey, and he took all his possession, including his library, there. Eventually, the Roman, in the Middle Ages, the Roman army went out and attempted to destroy it by fire, and a lot of it was saved and kept within the confines of a group the public part of that group known as the Chaldean Trust. But there's a private group, and so the books over throughout history were kept by a single, very small, tightly knit group of families. And of course, the Kolbrin, K-O-L-B-R-I-N, has many, it was when it first came out, when I first introduced it in this country, there was a surge by the disinformation crew to grab control of it and basically plagiarize it and then destroy it. So you can find on Amazon something called the Kolbrin, but it is not the Kolbrin. You can get a copy of the Kolbrin from the ChaldeanTrust.org. Its link is on my website. And once again, I typically don't give out links, but you can find the link to the Kolbrin on my website. And there's only one source. It's in Australia at Goody's Bookstore, and that's where you find the real Kolbrin. It's a gorgeous book, but the history of the Kolbrin is very important. It's a small sampling of the books from Joseph of Arimathea's library, which he had kept, and it's very clear in there that in ancient times, around the time of Christ, the knowledgeable people knew about Planet X. They knew all about it, and not only that, they knew that Planet X-type events occurred many times throughout history. There were many events, and when the big they knew that they were related to comets, and they knew when the big comets came in, the other shoe dropped. It was bad news for Earth. And they could see the big comets warring up in the sky, some comets eating up other comets, taking in other comets. So this was understood, and they understood that this was a devastating time for mankind. The Kolbrin begins by telling you that there were ages of man that were completely destroyed, and man had a rebirth. And that the events that occurred, obviously, were very much related to ancient comets. The reason the Kolbrin was put into my hands, and like I say, this was back in I won't say exactly when I first got the Kolbrin, and I won't say what form it was in when I first got it, or who I got it from, but three copies were brought into the United States. And I know where the other two copies went, and one of them was put into my hands, and they said, please tell us what this means. And so I looked through it, and the hair stood up on the back of my neck, because it basically was an ancient description in common man's words of everything I had been putting together regarding the comet-like destruction of the solar system, the great comets in the sky. And statistically, let's look at statistics for a minute. We have 9 planets, or 8 if you don't count Pluto. We have about 40 planets if you count the Pluto-like objects out there. And so I'm not going to go into that story, but basically we have a lot of planets. These are the major round planet-type objects. And then we've got about 40 moons, major moons in the solar system. Our own moon is pretty big. And then we have the Triton and Titan and the other big moons of the outer planets. We have Ganymede and the host of moons around Jupiter. Venus doesn't have a moon. Most of the older planets have moons. So at any rate, Mars has 2 little moons, asteroidal moons. But the point is that if you look at the distribution size of objects, there are thousands and thousands of asteroids, smaller objects. Of the big asteroids, there's not many, but of the small asteroids, as you get to smaller and smaller objects, there are many, many more, exponentially more small objects than big objects. But as far as the Jupiter-sized objects are concerned, now this was an almost comical release that came out a number of weeks ago. NASA reported it had been doing studies that there were probably as many free-roaming, that means planets without a home star, there were at least as many of those as there were stars in the galaxy. And so that means that the outer solar system of our star and of all stars are cluttered with Jupiter-sized objects. And these would be coming from all directions. They would be in all types of orbits if they were linked to a particular star. And these are all over the place. And there are reasons for that. I developed a paper when I was at Cornell called The Continuing Galactic Evolution, and it explains why there are so many free-roaming stars, Jupiter-like stars, in the galaxy. It's part of the process by which stars formed. But I'm not going to go into that at this point. But the point is that NASA now is subtly claiming that it has detected at least one of these for every star in the galaxy. Around our own particular star, NASA has studies to look for objects anything the size of Pluto and bigger. And they're finding lots of them, except they're not telling you. They're not telling you what the orbits are, if any of them pose potentially dangerous orbits. And if any of them come into the solar system, I guarantee you they won't tell you. Because NASA is a controlled agency. All the scientists are under gag orders. And if you go to a NASA website, they're not going to talk about this. NASA claims, NASA scientists have recently claimed, these are the ones in charge of the near-Earth asteroid program and the ones who study comets at JPL, etc. They have claimed that, number one, they don't have any equipment to look at comets. And number two, they don't really look at them. So if they were going to send you to look at comet information, they would send you to some amateur site to look for information about comets or send you to Wikipedia. These are the NASA experts. And the reason they're doing this is because when any real cometary activity comes along, the comet experts at NASA can just say, yeah, we don't look at those. I'll just give you a little note here. Back in the 90s, when my work was central on the internet around the comet Hale-Bopp, that the one of the investigators with the group found a NASA contract where they had a contract to take pictures of Hale-Bopp. Basically, they had real-time video using the Hubble Space Telescope of comet Hale-Bopp, but NASA publicly claimed they never took a single picture. This is the kind of lie that comes out of our illustrious space agency. But back to the Colburn. So when the Colburn was put into my hands, they said, what does this mean? And it was very clearly related to the ancient comets. So once I started promoting this and putting it out publicly and getting it into the hands of the public, the disinformation moved in. And they wanted to promote Planet X as, first of all, one thing, one object, on a 3,600-year orbit. And then it was supposed to come in 2003, May 15th, and it didn't come. And gee, doggone, that Planet X didn't come. So everybody, you can go home and don't worry about it anymore. That was the misinformation program. Remember, Crazy Lady Talks to Aliens? Well, by the way, the Crazy Lady Talks to Alien stuff is back again. I'll talk about that a little more when it comes to a thing called Comet Elenin. We have another major disinformation campaign underway to try and point over there, so to speak. Just a second. I'm going to get a drink of water. I'll be right back. Water from my Dalton water filter, by the way. Little side note there. But, okay, so the Colburn, what does it talk about? The Colburn talks about the major comets. What does the substitute plagiarized version of the Colburn talk about? Well, it has on the cover a great big orange ball. The Planet X is supposed to be like a big orange ball. So this is a central theme that I want you to look for. The misinformation people or the misguided people out there talk about Planet X as if you're going to look up, as if you're going to look up and see a giant orange ball moving through the sky. And that's simply not the case. Let me quick race through some of the other material here, and this is very important. I'll be doing a part two of Planet X next week. But at any rate, there are a lot of NUVO experts out there. I just want you to, when you look at their webpage, you'll find that they really don't have any history. They don't have any real credentials, and they don't have any history of talking about this. I want a quick talk about all the deaths occurred that happened when a comet named Hale-Bopp came marching through the solar system. It was first discovered by a guy named Harrington, who was the head of the Naval Observatory. He went to New Zealand with a very small camera to take an astrograph camera, an 8-inch, very small camera. He went to New Zealand to get the final photographs to confirm the entrance into our solar system from the south in the month of June, when that area of the solar system can only be seen. And before he could bring the photographs back, he suddenly died of a fast onset cancer. Just remember that, rapid onset cancer. Robert Harrington of the Naval Observatory died. He had an assistant called Tom Van Flandern, who really never talked much about Planet X or the Planet X issues. I don't know how much Tom really knew. Tom did some good science, and he did some very, what I would call, not good science. But he certainly defended some of the quackery that went on amongst the misinformation crews. I want to quick get to a guy named Gene Schumacher. Now, Gene Schumacher also had access to information from the South. He spent a lot of time in Australia and New Zealand. He was a geologist, actually. And he died under very mysterious conditions when he started talking about releasing pictures of Planet X. Once again, this would imply it's coming in from the south, that southern region, because of the pole axis of the Earth. The part of the solar system down in the south only is visible in the late days of May and into the time of June. Right about now, that season is somewhat ending. But Gene Schumacher one day turned up dead. The first story came out, and I remember tracking this as it was happening. Supposedly he rolled a Jeep in a crater out in the outback of Australia because he studied craters. Well, that was a pretty ridiculous story. So then there was another one where he was driving up the side slope of the crater and the Jeep overturned. That made a little bit more sense. But gee, Gene Schumacher had driven on that thing 1,000 times. Why should he all of a sudden roll over and die in the rolled over Jeep? So then the story came along that while he was outside the crater on the main road, and as he was turning onto the main road out in the outback of Australia, a big tanker truck came along and sideswiped him, T-boned him, and killed him. Well, in Australia, when those big dual tanker trucks come rolling across the desert, you can see them coming for 60 miles away. So, gee, I don't think Gene was so stupid that he pulled out in front of... So none of this made sense. It turns out that Gene died in the ambulance on the way to the hospital, supposedly. That's the final story. And then NASA cremated him and threw his ashes all over outer space as a way of celebrating his death. I want to talk about the Heaven's Gate people in California. This was a central part. Remember Art Bell? And the Heaven's Gate, the pictures that came from Courtney Brown and a guy named Chuck Schrammick. Heaven's Gate supposedly committed suicide. They were a group of programmers developing encryption and firewall products that the government couldn't hack into. But more than that, they were a group of health nuts. They might have been nuts, but they were very healthy people, and they were just about to gather a group of about 10,000 people from all over the country to go onto a hillside outside of Los Angeles to wait for Hale-Bopp to come in, because they believed that there were aliens associated with Hale-Bopp, and it turns out that NASA very much believed there were aliens associated with Hale-Bopp too. Remember, Hale-Bopp had a companion, and in the papers, the standard science negated that, stating, in fact, they had professional scientists fake photos of Hale-Bopp without the companion, until it was later found out that Hale-Bopp very much had a companion. In fact, at the Canary Island conference dealing with Hale-Bopp, the very first topic on the agenda was the companion of Hale-Bopp. I want to talk about Chuck Schrammick, a friend of mine. He was a talk show host in Houston, and I'm very much a big thorn in the side of NASA. You can go to my webpage, and I believe it's down at the very bottom. There's a kind of I forget what the link is, but at any rate, there's an interview. Chuck Schrambeck interviews me for about an hour, hour and a half, I forget. But at any rate, Chuck Schrambeck was one of the other guys that actually took a picture of Hale-Bopp with the companion and sent it to Art Bell. Chuck Schrambeck died of rapid onset cancer in lower back. I want to mention a guy named Father Malachi Martin. He was a regular guest on the Art Bell show. He worked for the Vatican. One day he was walking through the Vatican and he came across in some of the archive areas deep in the catacombs below the Vatican. He came across a computer terminal that had not been logged off. So he sat down and he found a direct link to the Hubble telescope. Father Malachi Martin died. I want to talk, oh, by the way, I wanted to mention that the poison that Heaven's Gate people took was the exact same poison that was allegedly taken by the James Jones group. What was the similarity between Heaven's Gate and James Jones group? They were both groups trying to get away from American society. Okay, who else died in the Hale-Bopp era? A group of Vatican astronomers were on their way up to a mountaintop, I believe it was in France, and they were in a gondola to see a telescope. They all mysteriously fell from that in that gondola and died. There were about 10 of them. They were Vatican astronomers. Okay, so what I'm telling you is during the Hale-Bopp era, there was a tremendous fear amongst the powers that be. Number one, that Hale-Bopp was in fact Planet X. And when it was first discovered, Planet X was on a direct collision course with Earth. Its orbit said that it would come within 1,000,000 miles of Earth. That's about 4 lunar distances. That's very close. And the nucleus of Hale-Bopp was extremely big. It was planet-sized. During the next 3 years, as Hale-Bopp moved into the solar system, it due to the tail drag of the large comet, it slowed down and Earth moved ahead in its orbit, and in fact we missed Hale-Bopp by about 3 months. So Hale-Bopp did not become a factor, but the Vatican thought initially for sure that Hale-Bopp was Wormwood, was Planet X, and also the biggest issue was that it came in with a companion. They knew that Wormwood had a designator on it, that it had a companion, and that becomes very important. Remember I talked about the Christmas star having a very unusual status, or something very unusual, that made the three Magi know that that was the star they were looking for, and they started on a trip that took them months, if not years, and a great amount of expense. And they went over to Jerusalem, where the star led them. But the Christmas star had a companion. I'm out of time. Join me next week for my part two of Planet X special. This is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.